everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to Case 2 of Bull Bodied Crime. My name's Kayla, and I'm your host for the evening, and I will pretty much be your host for every other evening because it's just me. So really fast before I dive into today's episode, I just wanted to give you guys a little bit of a background on who I am and what I'm doing with my life and what this podcast is all about. So like I said, my name's Kayla, and I grew up and live in a small town that's located in the Central Valley of California. I just graduated with my bachelor's in psychology. I work in an emergency room that is insanely busy, but insanely crazy and fun. And I mean, I learned so much at my job. I'm absolutely so grateful for that. Anyway, I'm planning on applying to nursing schools, and then after becoming a nurse and working as one for a few years, I want to apply to medical school and become a psychiatrist. So mental health has always been another passion of mine, especially after getting my psychology degree. I mean, I'm obsessed with it and obsessed with figuring stuff out about it, and I feel like it's a completely underrepresented population, so I just want to help people. That's my goal. I just want to be a really great psychiatrist who can help people, and if I can change one life and try to make people happy, I will consider my life a success, so that's what I want to do. How I came up with this podcast is that this is my first time ever having a semester off of school in years. And I don't know what to do with my free time. I mean, usually my head is in a book and I'm learning about something. And so I thought, what can I do with my spare time? And I thought I'd combine my other obsession, which is true crime, with my free time. So this is the full-bodied crime podcast. How I came up with the name is that the definition of full-bodied is rich and satisfying in flavor or sound. So with that being said, I really hope to bring you a podcast that's rich and satisfying in the quality of cases I bring to you and the content. And I'm really hoping you haven't heard them before, but if you have, I apologize. But anyway, that's me. That's the name of the podcast. That's the background. And I hope you guys enjoy it. I guess without further ado, we should get into today's crime. So, on today's episode, we will be covering the murder of Miranda Fenner. This case is any small town's worst nightmare. Just like the case we covered in the last episode of Adrian Jones, Miranda Fenner was a young, beautiful girl who was truly just beginning her independent life. Miranda was 18 years old and lived in the small town of Laurel, Montana. So I did some research on this town, and in 2017, the population was just over 6,500. So I can only imagine that back in 1998, when the murder occurred, that the town was even less populated and smaller. I couldn't find the exact population for that year, but I mean, if it's 6,500 in 2017, I'm sure it was really teeny tiny back then. Laurel, Montana is located in Yellowstone County and is tucked into the greater Billings, Montana area. And I actually recently went to Billings and I fell in love with the area. I mean, I fell in love with the entire state of Montana. All around, it's beautiful and there's just trees everywhere. It was freezing, don't get me wrong, but wow, what a beautiful state. And the whole thing with Billings is that even though it's that area's big town, it really does have a small town, like homey feel to it. So it's a really great place to visit for anybody interested. But anyway, back to the murder. So Miranda grew up near Billings in the small town of Laurel. She graduated from Laurel High School in 1998. She was just becoming an independent woman, and I mean, after you graduate high school, the world is like finally yours to take on. You're officially an adult, you can work, you can drive, and do most of the fun adult things that you've been waiting to do for all the preceding 17 years of your life. So she was really at the peak of her life, and she seemed very driven to make a great life for herself. But on the night of November 15th, 1998, the small town of Laurel, Montana would change forever. November 15th, 1998 was a typical Sunday. Everything had seemed routine for Miranda. She had a normal day, and that evening she worked her job at the local video store, which was literally called the movie store. And so this movie store was right down the street from her house, and oftentimes Miranda would even walk to work because the two were in such close proximity. They were just 3 blocks away from each other, so she often walked there and walked home. It was completely in the ordinary for her to do that. And plus, small towns just naturally feel safer. I mean, I remember walking in the town I live in at crazy hours in the night, and I've never felt unsafe. But Miranda's shift seemed similar that night to every other night. But around 8:15, a passing motorist noticed something odd. Two men were driving in their pickup truck by the video store where Miranda worked, and out of the corner of their eye, they spotted something. They spotted a woman crawling out of the shop doors, and I mean, the two men immediately pulled over and went to help her, but they like saw that she was covered in blood, and from their initial observation, they could see that she had like apparent stab wounds on her head and her neck, and her throat was even cut. One of the men rushed to call 911, and I mean, I'm sure it felt like forever for medics to arrive. I've been in one of those traumatic situations where you're waiting for the ambulance, and it literally feels like forever. I mean, in my situation, my house was 1 mile away, I think, from the hospital and less than 200 yards from the fire station, and it literally felt like forever for them to get there. And I mean, I'm sure, I believe I heard sirens go on this, like, within seconds of making the 911 call, but it felt like forever. That's all I can say. So I'm sure these men were just in agony waiting for medics to arrive. So the men waited with Miranda, and she actually ended up being medi-flighted to St. Vincent's Hospital, which was located in the larger city of Billings. Miranda's mother, Sherry, had no idea that her daughter had been stabbed. She was at work when she received the call that completely changed her life. Her mother, so Miranda's grandmother, owned a motel that was pretty much directly across the street from the video store where Miranda worked. And the grandmother was working when she noticed that there were sirens and emergency lights coming from the parking lot of the video store. So the grandmother then called her daughter, which is Sherry, Miranda's mom, and told her the news that no parent ever wants to hear. Miranda's mom is unsure of exactly what was said, but it was something along the lines of, "Honey, something happened at the movie store. Miranda's being taken to the hospital." Her mother rushed over to St. Vincent's, and on her drive, she wasn't necessarily sure what to think. I mean, Miranda had recently been involved in a car accident and broke her neck, so she was in one of those She was in one of those halo braces for a few months, and she had recently just got it removed. So in her mom's mind, she was thinking that Miranda was like putting up a movie poster or doing something in the video store when she fell and was climbing on something and fell and possibly re-injured her neck. I mean, she had no idea what was actually going on. I mean, she could have truly never fathomed probably the true fate of her daughter. I couldn't imagine being in that situation and just having no idea and just driving to the hospital and not knowing what's happened to your kid. She first knew something was seriously wrong when she arrived at St. Vincent's and was immediately taken into what she describes as a little white room. Something in her gut was telling her that something terrible had happened. After being in this room for about 10 to 15 minutes, Miranda's dad finally arrived at the hospital. So the way the dad was actually informed that something was wrong was that his son, Miranda's brother, was out riding his bike when he saw the police surrounding the video store. So he raced home on his bike to tell his father, who then rushed to St. Vincent's to be with his wife and daughter. Both parents had no information on the state of Miranda or what had even happened. They just waited in agony, knowing that something was terribly wrong. Guys, I work in an ER, and honestly, I know this sounds so frustrating, but like the doctors and nurses almost couldn't have told them anything. And I know how critical the situation was, but there's so much more behind it, especially when there needs to be law enforcement involved. I mean, then it becomes their case and they don't know who did this to their daughter. It could be a family member, it could be anyone. So in this situation, you have to be very selective on the information you tell anyone and even when you're allowed to tell them. You basically have to wait for the okay from law enforcement to share any information with the family. So I can imagine that this was such a horrific time for them because they're sitting there waiting to figure out what happened to Miranda. I mean, was she okay? Was she super hurt? Was she dead? I mean, they had absolutely no information as to what was going on. So about 2 hours after the arrival to St. Vincent's, Miranda was officially pronounced dead. After what felt like a never-ending time of waiting, a doctor walked into the room and told Miranda's family that she was gone. At this time, her family still had no idea what had happened and why. I mean, they just got the worst news of their entire life and had no clue as to what the cause of her death even was. Law enforcement knew that they had to tell the family details of Miranda's death quickly because the media had actually known about the case and the nightly news was about to come on. So they didn't want the family to hear about the details of the murder from the TV. They wanted to tell them personally. So they knew they had to work in a quick manner. So basically what the family was told was that there was a robbery at the movie store and Miranda had died from a stab wound to her neck. Hospital staff had prepared the body so that the family could see their daughter one last time, but they weren't allowed to touch her because it was an ongoing investigation. Oh, I couldn't imagine. I mean, to see someone you love so much and just not even be able to touch them or like hug them or just feel their skin one more time, it just had to be really, really traumatic for the family. I really could not imagine being in that situation. The family was obviously devastated and they had no idea who could have done this to their daughter. I mean, Miranda was described as a big-hearted individual, an amazing sibling, a loving daughter, someone who had a future working with kids and dreams of becoming a mother herself someday. So to add to this mystery was that Miranda had absolutely no known enemies. I mean, her family and friends couldn't think of anyone who would have wanted to do this to her. Detectives knew they had a tough investigation on their hands. Evidence is difficult to obtain in a crime scene where people are constantly going in and out of. I mean, I should clarify to anyone who's in the younger generation and has never seen a Blockbuster or Hollywood Video, but there used to be these stores back in the ancient days where you had to go check out movies. There was no instant downloading. Like, you had to physically get out of your car and pray to God that whatever movie you wanted to watch wasn't rented out or not in the store yet, and you had to like pay a cashier with an account you had and then return to the store within, I think it was like 3 days to return your movie without any late fees. I mean, wow, nothing makes me feel more old than explaining what a video store is. But I mean, that I was even young when they got rid of those. So I'm sure some people listening are like, what the heck is a video store? Anyways, inside of the movie stores, people are routinely walking in and out. I mean, they're picking up movies, touching the counter. I'm sure there were fingerprints and DNA everywhere of numerous DNA profiles. Detectives had absolutely no solid leads, no solid motive for their crime. Now, money was stolen from the cash register, which didn't rule out the motive of it being robbery, but they couldn't definitively say that robbery was the sole reason that Miranda was murdered. They interviewed over 700 people in relation to Miranda's case. 700. I mean, this is a teeny tiny town, so I'm sure they interviewed a good majority of the population and ruled them all out as suspects. With absolutely no definitive motive, no suspects, and no new leads to follow, Miranda's case goes cold. And unfortunately, it stays cold for about 14 years or more until the case is given to the Billings Police Department Cold Case Unit. Now, in those 14 years, the Fenner family never gave up hope that they would find their daughter's killer and bring them to justice. Sherry Fenner, Miranda's mom, had actually carried flyers with her everywhere and constantly passed them out in an attempt to get word out there, and she even posted an advertisement and billboards. I mean, the Fenner family was also offering $25,000 for anyone who had information leading up to the capture of her killer. But there was absolutely nothing, even with this large reward, and tireless efforts. I mean, they did so much and there was absolutely no leads for investigators. The person or persons who committed the crime weren't talking, and if anyone knew anything about this case, they were keeping it a secret as well. Even after the case was dusted off and transferred to the cold case unit, there was really still nothing that investigators could go off of. No new leads, no new evidence. I mean, they literally had nowhere to even begin trying to solve this case. Then, by the grace of God and sheer luck, they got a huge break in the case. In March of 2017, nearly 19 years after Miranda's murder, the police were interviewing a man named Zachary David O'Neill. Zachary was being questioned by police for another crime that took place in September of 1998, the same year of Miranda's death. On September 5th, 1998, O'Neill attacked, raped, and slit the throat of a newspaper carrier before leaving her for dead. He confessed and pleaded guilty for the true crime, or for this crime, but then Zachary had another confession he wanted to make. In March of 2017, police interviewed Zachary, and he confessed to the murder of Miranda Fenner. Now, really quick before we dive into the details of Miranda's murder again, O'Neill's mother was actually questioned about the murder just a few months after because her rental account was the last one popped up on the computer screen before, like, the last account that Miranda viewed before her murder. So they assumed that whoever used this account was involved in the murder somehow, but Zachary's mom was like, I had nothing to do with it. And surprisingly, nothing ever came of this lead. So, after confessing to the murder, Zachary O'Neill finally describes what happened back in November of 1998. O'Neill was just 18 years old, the same age as Miranda. He was living in Laurel at the time, and on this specific night, he went to the movie store to rent some movies for him and his mom to watch. He encountered Miranda and they exchanged, you know, just your typical customer cashier conversation. And after returning home, his mother noticed that one of the videos he had rented was a pornographic movie. So she told her son, Zachary, to go back to the movie store and return the movie. And according to court reports, on his way back to the store, Zachary got this idea in his head to rob the movie store. He, at this time, was involved in methamphetamines and was committing quite a few burglaries to fuel his meth habit. And, I mean, he was well known to law enforcement at this time. He had already actually been arrested for a few of these burglaries and drug involvement cases. And it was not a good situation. And he even actually admitted to doing meth before he committed this murder. So, he patiently waited outside of the video store for other customers to leave, and when it emptied, he attacked Miranda with a knife. Now, when he was asked why this crime escalated from robbery to murder, he told the investigators that he just decided to kill her to avoid getting caught. He later dumped the murder weapon while on a hunting trip with his father, so the weapon was never obtained as evidence from this case. The investigators had numerous people make false confessions to the murder in years leading up to Zachary's confession, but what made him different and stand out is that he provided investigators with about three key details that hadn't been released to the public. It was also stated in the Billings Gazette that he felt compelled to confess because his stepbrother was actually murdered a few years prior, and when they finally got a conviction of it to the killer for his stepbrother's murder, it made Zachary feel like he needed to confess to the crimes that he had committed. With that being said, Zachary O'Neill was tried and found guilty for the murder of Miranda Fenner. He was sentenced to two life sentences for the attempted murder of the newspaper carrier and then for the murder of Miranda Fenner. He actually pled guilty to the murder on July 22nd, 2019, which was just a few months back. So it was nearly 21 years later that there was finally justice. I read that wrong. He actually pled guilty to the murder. So he'd already confessed back in March and then pled guilty to the murder July 22nd of 2019, which was just a few months back. So, I mean, really, it was 21 years later after the murder that there was finally justice for Miranda and the Fenner family. So, you guys, that is my murder on Miranda Fenner. I mean, her parents still grieve today. I watched a documentary that I attached on the website under the YouTube channel, and it was just so sad. I mean, the mom was still hysterical talking about the crime. I mean, the dad is just angry about it. And the mom, I mean, she's honest. She's not going to forgive. And she even said that she hopes Zachary dies a terrible death. I mean, it's hard not to wish that onto someone who brutally killed your 18-year-old daughter. I just couldn't imagine. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed the second episode of Full Bodied Crime. And I appreciate you all so much. Please, if you would like to go give us a follow on Instagram, it's FB_crime. Follow us on Twitter at Full Bodied Crime Pod, I believe. Oh no, I think it's at Full Bodied Crime. Man, I should probably learn these a little bit better. We have a YouTube channel, Full Bodied Crime, and our website, full-bodiedcrime.com. So, you guys, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode, and I'm excited to bring you all the next one. Feel free to DM me too at fullbodiedcrime@gmail.com. You can let me know any tips, tricks, or any cases you want me to cover. So please just give us a like and follow and subscribe, because that is how we keep going. We are on Spotify now. We're on Apple Podcasts and a few other podcasting websites. So please just go check us out. I appreciate your support so much, and thank you so much for everything. Have a good one, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.